hard work. Okay, thanks a lot, Ivana, for thanks a lot for the organizer for inviting me to give this seminar here. It's a very pleasure and honor for me to be here, even if I am connected only virtual in this, let's say, COVID-19 issue. Okay, for me it's a pleasure, and I will talk about my own work on real-time reconstruction of tracks at LCB with FPGA. Okay, first of all, I would like to give you a little bit of introduction. I know that you are pretty, you know very well these things, but it's nice to remind now. In the history of high energy data processing, increased in sophistication and computing load because experiment grow up in complexity and sophistication because they need to handle a huge amount of data, as you can see in this nice plot that I stole from this reference that I put on the top right corner of the slide. Energy physics exploited the strong technological advancement in the consumer CPUs. They allow us flexible computing power at very low cost, and it's clearly visible in our home in the last two decades, the advancement in technology and CPUs. However, you know that the Moore's law is slowing down, and while our physics landscape is asking for more and more computing power to provide to perform high precision measurement, and we are at the beginning of the intensity frontier towards and more sophisticated, powerful experiments such as FCC, we need for more effective and specialized solution to perform this, such as high precision physics measurement. In particular, this holds for LCB, which is an heavy flavor experiment. And if you look the position of LCB in the plots, you see that the size of the single event LCB is smaller than the event of Hattle CMS or Helis in LHC, but the input rate at HFT1 is already very large, at least 1 MHz in run 2. And now we are approaching a significant challenge because the plan is to run at 40 MHz upfront in our TAQ trigger system already in 1.5 years since now, if the schedule of the C is confirmed. I don't want to spend many details about the upgrade, but this is a major upgrade. We are replacing the majority of our sub-detectors with new technologies and all the relevant tracking detectors, the vertex locator, the upstream tracker placed upstream the magnet, and also the downstream tracker. We moved to a different technology, the scintillating fibers. We will run a luminosity which is a factor of 5 larger than of the luminosity that we operate in run 2, which is 2 × 10^33. But I would like to stress that the major upgrade does not regard the sub-detectors, but the fact that we are going to have to read out all of them at the frequency of 40 MHz, which is the bunch crossing rate of the proton-proton collision at FCC. This is the major upgrade. We would like to reconstruct full events upfront in our trigger, and to do that, we adopted the so-called real-time analysis approach in the data processing. This is something which is well known because we already adopted this scheme in the run 2. And the idea is to reconstruct upfront the 30 MHz of visible collision in our HFT farm and to write on permanent storage a large amount of data, but to increase our yield, signal yield, and to go behind our level of precision, we need also to reduce the per event information, the so-called turbo stream, and to write on tape the majority of events will be signal events. And please remind that LCB already got billions of heavy flavor in run 2, and then we would like to go behind this level of precision. To that, we need a large amount of online computing power, and this is done by splitting two-stage our trigger system, HRT1 and HRT2. I will come very soon on this two-stage trigger level. And in the between, there is a large buffer to hold data during calibration and alignment, because at the end, we will not have any offline reconstruction. This is not affordable. And the idea, as we already did in run two, we produce physics measurement using directly the output of the trigger. Let me stress that the problem that we are going to face in less than 2 years, let's say, in data taking will start on April 22nd, is going to be a significant challenge and comparable to the challenge that CMS Atlas will face at the beginning of run four when the high luminosity LC will start, because the track multiplicity and hold or the heat multiplicity of an heavy flavor experiment that needs to reconstruct tracks at very low momentum, transfer momentum larger than 200, 300 MeV will be is comparable with the same problem when you require a transfer momentum larger than 2 GV, but at the luminosity, which is much higher at level of 5, 10 to 34. Okay, what I just told is just representing this picture from one of our documents, TDR. I don't remember now exactly, I forgot to put the reference here. And you can see that we have to process about 40 terabits per second of data, corresponding to 30 megahertz of non-empty proton-proton collision. And the HRT1 level need to process this data and to reduce the size of the data by a factor of 30, moving to 40 terabit per second to 1-2 terabit per second, corresponding to about 1 megahertz of event rate. This megahertz of events must be processed by HRT2. At the end, we will write on tape data at speed of the bond. And a large part of the physics program will be sent to the turbo stream, as already mentioned, 3/4. And the majority of the raw data and also many part of high-level reconstruction will be discarded to save much more signal events in our at fixed bandwidth. And as I already told, the HRT2 must be able to run a complete offline quality reconstruction because no further offline processing is foreseen by LCB for this turbo stream. Okay, I would like to give also to keep an eye also to the future. You know that LCB proposed a phase two upgrade to be installed during the launch and down four to run in run five and beyond, with the aim to fully exploit the potential of the high luminosity LHC, running at a luminosity which is equal to 2 × 10^34, and collecting in an integrated luminosity of about 300 inverse Fendubar. Here you can see the cover of two nice documents, also the content here is very nice, not only the covers. And in particular, in the expression of interest, the LCB collaboration mentioned some studies towards the realization of specialized FPGA processor for track reconstruction. Today, this is an official research and design effort into the real-time analysis project, and there are many interesting possible applications. They are the topic of this seminar. Why accelerator? I already explained it in my first slide that we would like to avoid to slowing it down as more slow. And in particular, we would like to continue progress of high intensity, high energy physics experiment. And this is going to require an hybrid approach. Above all, if we look at the far future in run five, in which the complexity and the amount of data will be huge. And then the idea is to use a specialized rather than a general purpose devices computing architecture to get greater efficiency. But the most important idea is that we would like to push processing down to the earliest possible levels of our DAQ system. This is what we call embedded reconstruction, because now it's going to become very important also to save bandwidth immediately, as soon as is possible. Just you want to reduce this huge amount of data because you want to move this data from one farm to another farm or different devices. And for run 4, the so-called upgrade 1B phase, where the luminosity and the running condition will remain the same of run 3, LSEB can, in principle, foresee some modest cost current technology improvements with the idea of improving the weakness that we will spot during the run 3, and also with aim to be prepared for a full upgrade in run 5, where the condition will be much harder, and LSEB will want or will need to reconstruct most of the events before the HRT, because the computing power for the CPU is very flexible, and you want to use that to make more sophisticated algorithms and cell trigger selection. Of course, run 5 is not so far, and the problem is an extremely challenge, and we will focus now the attention on run 3 and run 4. Okay, we propose to face this challenge using the Retina algorithm. This is not so new algorithm. Luciano Ristori published this idea the very first time in 2000. You can see the reference to the paper. This is a massively parallel architecture, and as you know, it has many similarities with half transform and also with associative memories, because also in that case there is pattern matching. Here I try to discretize, to summarize in just in using a very simple four step how this algorithm architecture works. And the first step, the idea is to discretize the space of track parameters, creating what we call pattern cells. And for each of these cells, we can generate a simulated track and to look at the intersection of these tracks with the detector plane to identify what we call receptors. And this operation connects the real space of intersection with the detector planes with the track parameter space. And the two spaces are connected with the mapping, which is very important because you need to distribute detector hits over the retina, over the whole grids. And this is done by using a switching network. And the idea is that you don't want to distribute whole hits to whole cells in the grid, because you will reach immediately bandwidth limitation. But the idea is to have an intelligent switching network to bring raw hits only in a reduced number of cells according to the mapping that I described in the step 0 through lookup tables. So the step 2 is called processing engine. You have a logic unit, and for each cell you are going to accumulate a Gaussian weight which is proportional to the distance with the receptors. This means that if you have raw hits that are aligned as a real tracks, you will end up with the local maximum over the grid, over the retina. And then in the step trip, in the step number 3, tracks can be identified just looking for local maximum of accumulated weights above a certain threshold. And when you find this local maximum, you find the tracks, the hits of the reconstructed tracks, and also the position over the grid provide you the track parameters. This architecture is something conceived for a very fast reconstruction, and the idea is to address real-time reconstruction by extreme parallelism and high connectivity. And we would like to mimicking some feature or natural neural system. The difficulties is not in the algorithm itself, but in its implementation in the real world, in particular in a real trigger and DAC system of a huge experiment such as LCB or Atlas or CMS, of course. Here I try to summarize its main features, the ultra low latency, because we would like to reconstruct tracks on the fly, and the process is going to be completely transparent with respect to the timing of the heaven building. And the ideal place to install this kind of system is what we call pre-build processing. And also we implemented all this architecture by low level software programming using VHDL, because we'd like to exploit whole FPGA computing power leading to a maximum theoretical achievable computational efficiency. And of course, you need also to simulate this architecture, this device at bitwise level to perform, of course, physics measurement. The first monolithic FPGA-based system is described in this public document of the CV collaboration in 2012, in which we at that time proposed to perform Velo plus upstream tracker tracking at 40 MHz. Since that time, we developed more recent application based on an array of commercial FPGA cards connected by optical network, and I'm going to present these various applications today in this in this presentation. Okay, the most important thing is how we integrate this kind of architecture within the DAQ system of the LCB upgrade. Here, there is this picture on the right side of the slide in which you see the scheme of our trigger and DAQ chain, in which you have the detector front end and you send using a huge amount of optical links point to point, the raw data to the Event Builder PC server farms through some readout cards mounting an FPGA. And the idea is to install this device in the pre-build level in the orange line that I overlapped to the picture before that the event builder is going to build the event. And then the challenge is to sustain 30 MHz of event throughput without any buffering or time multiplexing. Why we would like to do that? Because This allows us to be modular. You can use just the number of cards needed for the detector of interest. If you want to reconstruct the value, you have to just instrument the node of the EB farm receiving the raw data from the Velo readout cards. You don't need to unpack the event because the raw event comes directly to your FPGA card. You can reduce the data flow already in the event to reduce the size not only of the network of the event builder, but also the size of the event builder itself, in principle. And the end, this is transparent because it appears as a virtual detector, producing instead of raw hits, ready made tracks that can be used in the later stage of the DAC system for a more complex reconstruction. Let me point that LCB very recently, I'm not going to talk about this, but it's important this point. LCB very recently approved as a baseline for RAN3 a full HRT1 in GPUs, and the GPUs card are installed in the Event Builder, the so-called Allen project. And these cards, they are going to operate in the post-building level. They are installed in the Event Builder, but they will operate after the farm build the events, and you can find all the details in the TDR. And the two things are fully compatible with each other because, of course, HRT1, both in GPUs and CPUs, can take advantage of having, for instance, solved the problem of pattern recognition in the Velo or in other different tracking sub-detectors. The only caveat, of course, is the number of slots available in the Event Builder server node. How we would like to integrate pre-build stage. The Event Builder is made by about 173 interconnected PC servers. Each of that is equipped with three DAQ boards, the so-called TEL40 or PCI Express 40 cards, for a total of about 500 readout cards. And the events are built in these servers, and then send to the event filter farm. Now, of course, they are sent to the GPU system and then they are sent to the event filter farm where HRT2 will be running. The idea for the Retina is to equip it to instrument the EB nodes, which additional tracking boards running the Retina algorithm, the Retina architecture, and the proportion is one-to-one with the readout cards. The idea is that if for each node we have three readout cards, we will add three Retina tracking boards. The idea is to receive data from readout cards from a portion of sub-detectors to perform the retina processing and then to return back, to inject back in the Event Builder tracks with a very low latency, less than 1 microsecond. Of course, all tracking boards need to talk each other, and this can be done using an external optical network that I call in the picture patch panel, because you need to distribute the hits coming from different readout cards in different tracking boards. Of course, we are not going to build the event, but we are going to return just a portion of tracks in the track parameter space, because the retina is going to be distributed over all these tracking boards. And in the table on the bottom, you can see the readout cards and the correspondence one-to-one with the tracking boards for the Velo, for the Sci-Fi subdetector, and you need about 50 cards for the Velo subdetector and about 150 tracking boards for the Sci-Fi subdetector. We will come back later on this point. Before going into the details of the system of the tracking, I would like to remind us you how tracking at LCB works. We have three main tracking stations: the Velo, which is placed very close to the primary vertex, to the proton-proton collision vertex. Then we have the upstream tracker, which has a silicon microstrip technology placed upstream the magnet. And then we have the Sci-Fi sub-detector using scintillating fiber technology. We have three stations there, in which we are going to reconstruct more with a good approximation a straight line after the magnet. Each station has four planes with the geometry X, U, V, X. We have three types of tracks. Long tracks are the most important. They are reconstructable using all available information from Velo, upstream tracker, and T-station. And of course, the core physics of Hughes charm sector is made using this kind of track. We have also downstream reconstructable using only UT and T-station. Of course, any long tracks is also downstream tracks, but you can also, using the downstream track, you can also reconstruct, for instance, long-lived particles decaying between the Velo and the UT outside the acceptance of the Velo subdetector. This is crucial and very important to increase our acceptance for long-lived particles such as K-short, lambda zero, or similar particles. And at last, we have the T-tracks. They are reconstructable using T-station. And as you can imagine, if you want to trigger on downstream tracks at HRT1, the first stage of any algorithm starts from the T-tracks. Let me remind that now HRT1 tracking algorithm starts with Velo tracks as a seed, and then they look for hits in the upstream tracker first and later in the T-station to speed up the process. Okay, the idea is to speed up the Velo tracking, providing upfront primitives. And the idea is because even if the Velo provide a small amount of data, about 10% of the total, the tracking sequence at HRT1 level is dominated by the Velo pattern recognition, including the 2D clusters of the Velo layers, as you can see from in the pie chart on the right on this slide. The idea is that the system for the Velo is going to be very small, because you need only 50 cards to reconstruct all Velo layers. And if you are able to reconstruct at time t equal to zero with very low latency, less than 1 microsecond Velo tracks, you can save time for the CPU, and then the CPU can use time for doing for more complex selection and algorithms. And this is also a good first test case for future larger scale application, as we will see in the next slides. The second physics case is the downstream tracking. This is an important point because if you want to reconstruct standalone T-tracks without the help of any seed from Velo, you are going to face a very intensive path recognition problem because the sci-fi is has a very high occupancy. Numbers in this slide maybe are not updated to the latest one, but just to give an idea, if you want to reapply this algorithm to the standalone T-tracks, you need for each event spend about 500 microseconds. And you have to keep in mind that if you want to...
Hello, Michael.
Yes. Can you hear me? Ivana, can you hear me?
I can hear you. And I heard Ivana. Now she's gone.
Okay.
I wonder if it's Ivana's connection problem. So...
Hello.
Hello.
Ivana? Is mine the connection problem or...
No, I hear you fine, Michael.
Okay, very good. Thanks a lot. Because sometimes I have some problems. Okay, but today everything looks fine. Can I go ahead?
For me, you can. I think maybe just carry on.
Okay.
Yeah.
The slides are in full screen or...
Now they are.
Okay, thanks a lot. Sorry. Okay, sorry for this interruption. Please let me know if we have some trouble with the connection. Maybe I can switch on my mobile phone. And okay, as what I was saying, that performing reconstructing standalone T-tracks is a very intensive path recognition problem. And if you compare it with the CPU time that you need to do that, neglecting the fact that at the end you have to add also UT hits to form a downstream track, this is going to require a lot, much more CPU time. You have to compare these numbers with 33 microseconds, which is the maximum time budget if you assume to have an event filter farm of 1,000 nodes. I am talking about CPU, GPUs now is different, but at the end, this seeding algorithm is going to be very challenging to be adopted at HLT. The idea is to have T-tracks available upfront. It's going to be offer many physics benefits. Not only have the opportunity to trigger at HLT1 long-lived particles, downstream tracks, but also here I listed other physics benefits that I don't want to go into detail now. Then the message is very important to have the opportunity to have T-tracks immediately available at time t equal to zero for the HLT1. Okay. Okay, let's move to our research and design efforts. Then the idea is to have two different projects, but the building block are the same. Then developing all stuff are exactly the same thing. But the idea is to have a first pilot project to reconstruct tracks in the velo tracking, already in RAM 3 using, for instance, a parasitic test bed. To demonstrate that this technology, this architecture can be fully integrated in the DAQ system of LCB experiment, and we can produce high quality tracks at time t equal to zero. The idea then is to reconstruct the velo tracks, but as you can imagine, since the base plan we assume to have the two-dimensional cluster finder in the HLT1, we need also to make a cluster beforehand at 30 megahertz if you want to run Velotrex with Retina-like system. After that, the idea is to realize a larger scale system, a downstream tracking unit for RAN4 using raw hits from sci-fi subdetector, and this would make event reconstruction primitives that T-tracks immediately available to the event building and to the high-level trigger to speed up not only the velo reconstruction, but also to allow to trigger at HLT1 level on downstream tracks, along with all other benefits that I mentioned in the previous slide. Okay, then let's move to the step zero, the velo cluster finding. The idea is that we exploited the firmware that we developed for the Retina, because the problem is extremely similar, because you need to design a parallel FPGA algorithm for finding cluster and then to check if neighbors you have cluster in neighbors or not. And we developed a matrix of active interconnected elements with the aim of finding meaningful cluster, the same principle of retina algorithm. The most important piece of this work is how we distribute data for clusterization. And to save FPGA logic, we use a sparse matrix, a chain of sparse matrix, instantiate on demand as superpixel data flows into the system. A superpixel is just a rectangular of 4 times 2 pixel. This is just for bandwidth constraint. We receive data from the readout in this format. This is done because you can flag a superpixel as isolated or non-isolated. Isolated superpixel are handled separately, still in parallel using lookup table, while this sparse matrix chain is allow us to find the cluster at 30 megahertz for non-isolated superpixel. At the end of the event, data are pushed out in parallel to a network of mergers and switches and serialized for the next stage that is going to be or HLT1 or a retina-like system as we're trying to develop. Details can be found in the proceedings that I linked here and also in this thesis of a student of mine. Okay, what about the implementation of this clustering algorithm performance? We wrote all the firmware in VHDL and we implemented the system in Altera Stratix 5 FPGA. The clock ran at a speed of 3,150 megahertz. We tested the system using simulated velo data and in particular used the most crowded sensor in the minimum bias simulated sample very close to the primary vertex region. And at the end, we achieved a throughput of 39 megahertz at a luminosity of 2 × 10^33 without any errors. And let me press this first time, at least as far as I know, 2D cluster algorithm is able to run at this speed of larger than of 30 megahertz. We then fully integrated this firmware in the Velo readout card, which is not the tracking board for the retina, but is the readout card of the experiment which exists already in the system, with the aim of maximizing the usage of these FPGA boards, because at the end we discovered that the amount of logic and memory was very limited, about 10% of memory and 26% of logic. At the end, we also measured the gain in throughput because we relieved this workload from the HLT1, and we measured the gain of 4% of the throughput of HLT1. The GPU in the CPU was a little better, 8%. Discarding, and also we gain in bandwidth because discarding superpixel in favor of reconstructed cluster reduced the bandwidth of a factor of 15%. This is very good because the CB collaboration appreciated this kind of work, and now we are performing final checks because the collaboration wants to adopt this as a new baseline for run 3, again, this throughput gain, speed up of the HLT1. Because the clustering is now moved into the readout Velo cards. And let me tell that the firmware of the Aria 10 chip mounted on the Velo readout card is now full 80% level, which is a size affordable for this kind of technology. Let's move to the step one, the Velo tracking. As I already mentioned, the idea is to reconstruct the real tracks in a test bed using run 3 data. This is a system very small, about 38 readout unit if you want to reconstruct tracks using forward velo layers. And keep in mind that you can reduce you can restrict yourself on a single quadrant, and you can build a main block, which is, of course, the basic block for the entire system. Just this requires only 10 cards. How works the Retin architecture for reconstructing Velo tracks? As I already mentioned, the Retina is a two-dimensional algorithm, because we would like to exploit the full connectivity inside the FPGA. And then the idea is that we have to reduce the dimensionality of the problem. If you want to characterize, identify a tracks in the 3D space, you need 4 parameters, and you have to reduce this problem to a 2D problem. And to that, we neglect the impact parameter, which is very small for the pattern recognition needs. And we find tracks looking just in a plane of 2 parameters, UV, that you can see in the plot on the bottom of the slide, where UV are very similar to the track direction angle theta x and theta epsilon. But we need to segment to have 10 different retina grid, because we need to segment the zeta direction, because the primary vertex distribution covers a long range between 200 millimeters, minus 200 millimeters, plus 200 millimeters, as you can see in the plot on the top of the slide. Then the idea is to have a full system, or system made by about 100 kilos total cells. If we consider that each of these cells to be implemented needs about 1,000 logic elements, this means that if you want to build a system of 38 cards, this requires about 2.6 million logic elements for chip. This is something which is already available on COTS PCI Express cards. And please let me remind you that now it's possible to buy boards with FPGA up to 5 million logic element in a single chip. You can see in the slide the plot of cell excitation levels for a single 100 times 100 retina matrix. Of course, this is something which is still ongoing, and we need to perform a local algorithm filters to remove the noise, because tracked in different zeta retina. But this is something that we know how to solve it, and we have to prepare packet for deliver this information to the HFT1 through the event builder, and allowing to perform the full fit and to measure with high precision the parameters of the tracks, including the impact parameter. We plug this algorithm into the HFT1 software to verify, to measure the tracking performance of this approach. And if you take a look at the table, and also at the plot that I put in the slide, you can see that the reconstruction efficiency for the long tracks with the minimal requirement on momentum larger than 5 GV end up to very similar tracking efficiency between the CPU algorithm and the FPGA-based reconstruction algorithm. Let me remind you that final fit is performed by the CPUs or GPUs, of course. The retina is going only to solve the pattern recognition problem, providing a list of order hits connected to the reconstructed tracks. An important point of the system, of the architecture, is the connection network. I mentioned this in many places in the talk, because the distribution of the hits in the retina cells, in the retina accumulators, is a very important point from a point of view of bandwidth. For the Velo, we need to connect about 38 cards using 4 full mesh fast bidirectional optical link networks of 10 FPGA for 4 independent Velo quadrants. Such configuration, as you can see in the sketch on the slide, requires 12 links for FPGA. and can be already built using FPGA available on the FPGA boards available today on the market with 16 optical transceivers. This configuration needs only 12 connection at high speed, optical connection at high speed. Let me also say that, of course, this switch network increases the latency of the system. We performed some measurement. At the end, we remain still below 1 microsecond limit. We also started with some performing some initial tests of a life-size network using five different cards, mounting five different FPGA, and we just transmitted between the net pseudo-random sequence to the other four FPGA through 10 gigabit per second link, optical links. Sorry, there is a typo on the slide. We tested this for 23 days at max speed, and we measured an extremely small bit error rate, as you can see from the numbers on the slide, or if you can take a look to the proceeding from Federico at Connecting the Dots 2020. Then let's move to the last part of the talk, which is the downstream tracking. The idea, as already mentioned to you, is the reconstruction of standalone T-tracks. This is going to be a very difficult problem. In fact, we are not able to do that at HLT1 level, but only at HLT2, where the rate is reduced. Please keep in mind that a small component of magnetic field is present in the sci-fi region, as shown in the plot on the right, in the region of the T-station T1, T2, T3. This is a little bit more complicated problem because you need to reconstruct 3D tracks and in the X, Z view, you need to approximate the tracks using a parabola because the magnetic field in the Y direction is small and constant. And then you need three parameters to parametrize the trajectory of the tracks in the X, Z plane, while in the stereo view, in the Y, Z view, you need only two parameters because the trajectory of the particle can be approximated with a very good level of approximate precision such as a straight line, as you can see in the event display that I reported on the right of this slide. Few words about the sci-fi sub-detector. This is completely new. A new technology, we will have these three tracking stations, T1, T2, and T3, with each will have four layers, X, U, V, X geometry, where UV layers are tilted by a stereo angle plus minus 5 degrees. This is a standard geometry for this kind of detectors. It is going to be read out at 40 megahertz, and the spatial resolution is 100 microns. The important feature is that, I don't know if I can call feature, but is that this is going to be a very occupied detector because we expect to have 300 hits per layer up to a maximum, we have a long tail up to a maximum of 800 hits per layer. In this study, we divided the sci-fi sub-detector in four independent quadrants, and we also measured to have a negligible loss of efficiency because of tracks crossing different quadrants. This is very important for the switching network, and then you can have a building block which has a very small dimension, similar to that one for the velo tracking. To reconstruct the tracks, we divide the work, we factorize this operation into sequential stages. This is important point. In the first one, that I call it path recognition, we find for the XZ track projection using only axial layer. This is very similar to what we do in the CPUs. And in this first stage, we approximate tracks as a straight line, and for a moment, we neglect the fact that there is a small quadratic term of the parabola, because as already mentioned, we need the two-dimensional retina. And for each local maximum that we are able to find, we need to perform a local calculations into the FPGA and to perform a linear k-square fit to a parabola to measure track parameters and to reduce the amount of ghost that you find when you look for tracks over a certain threshold in the retina. And here you can see how a single track appears in this retina space. And as a second stage, we need to associate where we found the axial projection of the tracks and solve the pattern recognition over the axial view. We need to associate the Y-Z track projection. And this is, let's say, a simple task because when you know the track projection in the XZ plane, you can transform UV layers in Y coordinate, UV its layers in Y coordinate, and then you can repeat exactly the same procedure for the pattern recognition in the XZ view using the same firmware of axial pattern recall stage, but now the granularity of the retina is much lower because you reduce your attention to a very small part of the detector when you have as an input, as a seed, the axial projection. Then the building block is to track six layers of the sci-fi subdetectors. We use for retina parameters the intersection of the straight line of the tracks with the first and the last layer, X0 and X11. And we use a similar parametrization for the stereo association using Y0 and Y11 track coordinate. The interesting physics tracks, long and downstream tracks, are distributed over the diagonal. This is very interesting because this means that X0 and X11 are very, very similar. And from our simulation, we estimate that to solve the entire problem of the sci-fi subdetector, we need also in this case a system of about 100 kilo engine cells. And this is a size very similar to the size that we have found for solving the problem of the velo tracking. This granularity is driven by the axial retina, of course, because we need to ensure the presence of the true hits in the within the two closest hits of each receptor when we look in the local maximum in the hits which are accumulated in the local maximum that we have found. Just to give an idea of how this system works, you can see the retina for a single event. In the x-axis, you can see the x0 coordinate of the tracks in the first layer of the sci-fi and x11 in the last layer. You can see that the efficiency of reconstructed tracks is very high, 95%, but you have many red points, and this means you have many local maximum, many ghost tracks. And this is something which is not affordable because you cannot send all of them to HLT1 and then to solve this combinatorial background. And to do that, we need to apply a further quality requirement on the chi-square, and we need to perform a linearized fit of the hits contained in the maximum. And then we apply this further requirement on the chi-axial chi-square less than 20. And as you can see, the efficiency remain high at the level of 80-90% if you apply some minimal momentum request to the tracks, and the ghost rate goes to a level of 15% low and comparable with what we obtain with the standard seeding algorithm. Then we have to associate the stereo view to the tracks. For each reconstructed axial tracks candidate, as already mentioned, the UV hits from tilted layers are then transformed in Y coordinates and accumulated into the corresponding stereo retina in new parameters Y0 and Y11. We have to do the same processing of the axial retina, but now the difference is that for each single axial track, you will have a different stereo retina with a much lower granularity, because at the end you would like to need this process in any case in parallel to speed up everything to remain with the latency, which is less than a level of 1 microsecond. The Y-its combination with the best chi-square is promoted as the Y-Z track projection, because as you can imagine, you can find different local maximum for each stereo retina. This is done using a stereo retina with a granularity of 500 cells, which is much lower the granularity of the axial retina, which was about 100 kilo cells for a total of about three of these small retina for each FPGA for an amount of about 1.5 kilo cells per FPGA. We performed, we built and assembled some hardware prototypes within our INFN Retina project. We used an ASIC prototyping board by the Dini group equipped with two large FPGA, two Stratix 5. Here you can find some information about the characteristics of this board that you can see in the picture on the right. We tested all part of the system, the switching network, the engine. We checked the final result. We also injected skewness between different inputs, and in LCB, the very maximum can be 10 microseconds, and buffer size and throughput successfully passed this very, very difficult, let's say, test. It's very unlikely that different input will have 10 microseconds of skewness. This is a very maximum that can happen. The idea is that this building block this block can be used as a building block for entire tracker, and this is sold not only for the downstream tracking but also for the Vero, and the result on this prototype can be therefore really extrapolated to a real system size. I would like to show you some measured performance. We performed various configurations. We tested various configurations, and here I show this six axial layers building block of scintillating fiber tracker as a function of retina occupancy, number of track over number of cells. And you can see from the plot on the right that if we look to the occupancy level of the sci-fi subdetectors, which is the largest one in the LCB, we achieved a throughput which is well above 30 megahertz. This is very important because tell us that it's possible to do this kind of processing at this speed. And the latency of the entire process is less than 1 microsecond at the level of 400 nanoseconds. This prototype allows us also to determine the size of the single engine, which is returned to be about 1,000 logic element, and this provides immediately the size of the downstream tracker retina-like system, because you need to instrument 78 FPGA for the pattern reco part and the other 78 FPGA for the stereo association. And also in this case, we end up with about 100 kilo engines for all of them. And this means that you need to buy FPGAs with able to contain about 1 to 1 million logic element per FPGA. And this is very important because this tells us that this kind of system principle can be built already today with available FPGA boards on the market. Just my last slides before conclusions. Here I show the performance of the downstream tracker. We used the simulated realistic proton-proton collision at the LCB upgrade running conditions. In the table, you can see that we are able to achieve for the axial reconstruction efficiency level of 90% when we ask for a minimal momentum threshold. Just let me remind that all LCB analysis in run 2 have the cut P larger than 5 GV. Also the efficiency of the full 3D reconstruction is very good at level of 80%, 85%, but let me say that this part needs to be optimized, because when you solve the path recognition problem over the axial view, you expect to achieve the same efficiency when you associate the stereo projection of the tracks, as we know from the CPU algorithm. And here we do exactly the same thing. Okay, let me conclude. After a few years of research and design work, we are now very close to build and to test life-size demonstrators of a first FPGA-based 30 MHz tracking system. As I show you in this short seminar, detailed simulation and prototypes that we have built provide a demonstration that such fast rating is feasible based on extreme parallelization of the retina approach, and in particular is feasible using current COTS FPGA system, and we hope to install and having some of this system operating in run for the downstream tracking, and let's say also for the velo tracking. And this open the possibility, let's say good hopes for future application in phase two LCB upgrade, where we will have a very high rates and the, we will need a very huge computing power to solve the problem at the luminosity factor 10 larger than the luminosity that we expect to have in run 3. And in particular, we expect to have a first DAQ integration test in the LCB vertical slice setup, the so-called testbed, planned in a very short time scale as soon as data will come during run 3 to test that this kind of system can be fully integrated in the DAQ system as a large experiment such as, of course, LCB. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot to you, Michael, for this very clear and nice presentation of the retina architecture, which seems quite neat and promising tracking system as demonstrated for LHCb. So we now have time to move to some discussion and questions. I apologize for the network problems, which are probably mine.
Ivana, I have my hand up. Do you see me, Chris?
I have not seen it yet. Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, yeah, a wonderful talk. Thank you so much. I just have a question about the data that you get from the Velo pixels. When you were describing the cluster finding, I wasn't actually understanding. Is it the case that you get signal amplitude from each pixel, or is it just a binary yes or no? I didn't quite understand.
No. Sorry, I went very fast because I had many topics in the talks. Here, the similarities with the retina is only this, the film that we brought to ask for neighbors. But here the answer is yes or not, and we look for the patterns that we can see on the right side of the slide. When you fill this matrix, okay, here maybe you see the pointer, okay. Yes. When the end event arrives, all these matrices are this large matrix of pixels, and then you look with the sensor that we developed of retina, this kind of patterns to look for clusters, because the majority of the cluster have two or three pixels. Then a square of 3 times 3 is sufficient to identify the majority, more than 99% of all clusters in the Velo layers. And the answer is yes or not here, but just you look for this kind of patterns here.
Okay, but when you want to get the position associated with that cluster, are you doing that by a centroid finding based on the amplitude in each pixel, or is it purely binary? I didn't quite answer.
No. Now I got the questions. The idea is that when we find the pattern, okay, for instance, we have some active pixel here, we calculate the center mass of the cluster using a lookup table in which we memorized all combination of a square 3 times 3. I hope that I answered the question now.
Okay, and the contents of that table is actually the amplitude associated with each pixel.
No, for the moment it's only yes or not. The pixel, the blue one is 1 or equal to 0. We don't look to the amplitude of the signal.
Okay, but for offline, I presume you have actually the amplitude, because you need a very precise, in order to do the secondary vertexing and all that, you need the most precise measurement, right, of the cluster position.
Yeah, this is something that you can do at... Okay, the idea is also there is under discussion to produce the cluster and to also send the information to HRT1. But This is something that can be done at HLT2, not HLT1, where you have much more time. And sure, this is something that can be done, but from our preliminary studies, the answer one or yes or not is give you enough precision. But it's something that is under discussion to increase the precision if it's possible at HLT2 level. But you need now that we need for speed. And then this is something which is, let's say, a second order for the moment.
Sure. When you do measure that amplitude, how many bits are there associated with the pixel amplitude?
I don't have the distribution here, but the majority of the cluster have 1, 2, or 3 pixels. There is a large tail with many pixels, but is a very extremely small. And then this square 3 times 3 is sufficient to cover a whole. All possibilities. I don't know if I have some picture. But if you take a look at this thesis of this talk, you have many plots and many details. There is no need to read all the thesis, but there are 2 sections in which you can find all these details of these plots and the distribution of the clusters.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other questions? Please go ahead if you have a question.
Maybe I've got a quick question. I'm sorry, I actually missed most of your talk. I was delayed and only got the last 5 minutes. These FPGA boards that you're using, what sort of FPGAs do you have on them?
Okay, many of the studies were performed using this DINI board. Equipped with 2 Stratix Altera Stratix 5, but now we are buying a PCI Express board from Bitware at Onalatec, mounting equipped with the Stratix 10 with 2.8 million of logic element and 16 optical link at 28 gigabit per second.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, have you considered using Xilinx boards?
This is something that we need to study for the moment. As you can imagine, all our firmware is for Altera Stratix family, and then we are continuing in this path. But sure, at some point, we need also to take a look to the Xilinx chip and to see if there is something that we can gain or not. But I assume that they are going to have similar performance, but sure, this is something that we need to check. But since we started with this is something which is historical, because we started problem using mounting an Altera Stratix 3, and then we brought our first code in with Altera tools, and then we continued on this path. That's the only reason for the moment.
Okay, thank you.
You are welcome.
Thank you. Further questions? So I have one. You mentioned that the proposal for this tracking system called Retina was published almost 20 years ago. So is this the first implementation? And has anything been changed with respect to the original proposal?
Okay, sorry, maybe I didn't transmit the correct information. The idea was published by a colleague of mine, Luciano Ristori, in 2000. And this was developed at the time that Luciano Ristori, which is the guy who designed the Silicon Vertex tracker in CDF, was studying this kind of problem. But that time, we didn't have a chip with this high bandwidth of 1 terabit per second. Then this idea was not implementable in the technology of that time. In that paper, there is only the description of the algorithm, which is very simple. It's very similar to the AF transform. If you take a look, it's extremely similar to the AF transform. The new thing that we are trying to developing is its implementation in a real life DAQ system. And in particular, the most important point is the distribution of the hits, because the idea is to perform the pattern recognition while data flows into the system. And then you have to stay in this, let me go, where, okay. When you go in this step one, okay, you have to, in principle, if you take a look at this reference, the idea is to have to transmit all its to each of these cells here. And you understand that you need to duplicate the information a lot. And then you end up immediately with the bandwidth limitation. Okay, then the idea is to have this intelligent switching network that allow you to bring raw its only to the region in which they are important. And this kind of architecture, along with the processing engines, is the thing that we are developing. And it took, let's say, 20 years from the original idea was published. What is difficult is the implementation of this kind of idea in modern high-end FPGA.
Okay, yes.
If you succeed, then you are able to perform complex pattern recognition problem while data flows into the system. That's the what we would like to do.
Yes, so it seems that what you described, that your solution is quite neat and modular, and yeah. I was just interested whether this allows this method to be used also in Atlas or CMS experiments, or what would be the limitation there?
Okay, this can be certainly used also in different environment, but the problem that you have to develop a completely different network, and you have to divide the space in intelligent way. In practice, you have to do all the R&D work that we we did in the last years, and in principle, it can be used and in Atlas and CMS, and maybe situation is also much simpler because you have to reconstruct track space, which is let's say well suited for this kind of algorithm, because you can divide the transverse view and the stereo view also in that case. And when you divide the problem, the axial view, that the view on the transverse plane is just described with the two-dimensional parameters, also in that case neglecting the impact parameter. And then in principle it's possible, and I know that also in CMS some effort has been done for high luminosity LHC from the Fermilab group, but it was an hybrid approach between associative memory and retina algorithm. They want to solve the problem of the pattern recognition in a large part of detector using associative memories, and then when you reduce the problem in a small part of the space, you can use a retina algorithm to find tracks in this small part of the space. But sure, this can be implemented also in a different geometry. We are focused our attention on LCB because we are interested to do this kind of physics at very, very, very high precision.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
And one last question from my side. So you mentioned that you also use the high-speed inter-optical connection within an FPGA, inter-FPGA connections.
Yeah.
And is that because your latency allows you to do so? And does this add complexity to the firmware and the resources being used? And what is the speed of the optical links that you're using to connect nodes?
Okay, this is a you have many questions. Okay, let me. Okay, you need this fast network connection because you need to have a very small latency. One second. Okay, excuse me. The idea is that you need this patch panel here to connect all tracking boards, which is the network connection that I described in different slides. And here you need to be fast, because in principle you would like to have all the retina in a single tracking board, but it's not possible because you need many cells and you cannot fit all 100 kilo cells in a single chip. And this is why you need to be very, very fast. And now for the moment, we are using, as I show you here, this topology in which you have to connect 10 FPGA with optical link, creating a full mesh between 10 points, and then you need to have another full mesh connecting all the four different mesh of 10 FPGA, because you need to talk with 38 cards, which is our let's say simple building block of the network. This is also for the downstream tracking, and here we need optical link 28 gigabit per second, because here in this network you need to duplicate and to increase the bandwidth a lot, and then you need the full speed, the full bandwidth in this stage. Instead, for the connection with the readout cards in this other slide, here we have a bandwidth which is fixed from the LSCB specification, because each readout board sent data to the event builder at a speed of 100 gigabit per second. This is due to the fact that we used some kind of fibers when we projected, designed this DAQ system. And then you will have, for instance, for the Velo, 56 cards. Each of them is going to give you about 100 gigabit per second. Then you need only to, maybe I have a slide in backup in which this kind of things is explained a little bit better. This one, okay. Okay, this is, let's say, an EB nodes. From the end, going to the PC, which is the readout RCB card. And here you have a limitation from the design of the experiment, which is 100 gigabit per second. And then you need here to duplicate the data. One copy goes to the EB nodes for doing the usual, let's say, stuff, and also after the event is built, the HLT1. But if you duplicate the data, you need to send this data to our tracking boards, and then you need to receive data at a speed of 100 gigabit using a PCI Express protocol. And then the optical link regards only the patch panel, and here you need to go fast, and you need also a large bandwidth because you are going to duplicate hits, because some hits must be sent to different tracking boards. I don't know if I answered your question, but that's the point. The difficult point of this kind of system is these things that we call, let's say, patch panel, but not from a technological point of view, but because you need to design this in a very intelligent way to avoid to go beyond your bandwidth limitations. At the end, this is something which is very simple to program in VHDL. It's just a point-to-point connection. And if you have an address, you have a point-to-point link. If you have an address, the network knows very well where to have to transmit, to transport the data. The idea is, the intelligent idea is how to to design the topology of this network to avoid to go beyond the bandwidth limitation of your technology.
Oh, yes. Okay. I see it's the configuration of the optical system. That's important. Okay. Yes, that answers my question. I don't see any other comments. So thank you very much, Michael, for joining. And thanks, everyone, for joining. Sorry if you had some problems with the connection today. We can close the meeting now.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks a lot to everyone for joining this seminar. It has been a pleasure for me.
For us too. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Have a nice day. Okay, thanks a lot, Ivana. It has been a very pleasure to give this. Okay. Hi, Ivana, are you there? Just would like to thank you for all the help that you gave me during this day. Maybe you are not connected anymore. Okay, bye-bye. I am going to disconnect. I will send you an email. Bye.
Hello?
Hi, Ivana. I would like just to thank you for all the help that you gave me during these days. Maybe you can hear me.
Yes, I hear you. Thank you very much. I was not sure about the connection, whether it was my problem today.
Ma, people told that they didn't have any problem. Likely it was your problem, and then I think it's fine because I'm able to understand if there's some problem of connection, but it seems not.
Yes, it that's good because you could spot when I hope that you could spot when your connection was.
Yeah, I was able to talk with other people connected without any problem when you were off, and it's fine.
Okay, so we have the recording.
We are still recording. Maybe you can stop.
I hope I can stop it.
Okay,
I think. Maybe. My client crashed, but I think when we close this meeting,
okay. I want just to thank you for the invitation and for the help and for it has been a very nice, I think, seminar. And I know that there are people very interested in your laboratory in this kind of stuff, and I hope to interact with them also in the future.
Yes, we have people which are interested in these high-speed technologies, especially for the upgrade.
I know.
Oh, that's good. And I also thank you that you accepted and you managed to do it within your schedule.
And
it was really a very interesting presentation for me to learn about this, and hopefully we will see it performing in real time during round three already, as I understand.
Yeah, the idea is to do some parasitic tests, let's say, of a quadrant of a valley to see if you're able to reconstruct real tracks of very good quality to see how we are able to speed up the HRT1 processing. But this is something that's going to run in parasitic way with all the structure of the DAQ of the round three. But it is something which is very difficult and it's very important to perform this, let's say, test bed demonstration. Mm-hmm. It's extremely important to be able to demonstrate that we are able to make tracks, even of a small portion of the velo in which everything works, the network, the engines, we are able to, also because there is another possible problem because we need to duplicate the data in the EB nodes. And mm-hmm. then there is already a lot of traffic there. And also we are studying different configuration options to duplicate data without interfering with the with the standard processing of the EB and now of the GPUs, as you can easily understand.
Yes. So the first stage is to run parasitically entirely.
Yeah. To reconstruct the velo or just a portion of the velo in the parasitic way during run 3 and to show that everything works correctly.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
And as far also as I understand the gain that is offered by the retina system is not able to be duplicated by a purely GPU based system. So you really need this to move this down at the hardware level, at the readout level, the tracking stage.
Yeah. Okay, maybe in run 3 and run 4, maybe you can still live with the standard CPU, let's say GPU system.
But right.
Of course, you need to sacrifice some part of the physics program. For instance, the downstream tracking, it's not possible to reconstruct those tracks upfront. And then this means that the channels in which you have a case short a lambda 0 is going to be not so efficient as the other ones. And I think that you can live without this kind of system, sacrificing mm-hmm. some part of your physics program. It's something that it's possible that it can happen. But the idea is that in run 5, you will have in any case to go towards a very, let's say, aggressive hybrid solution in which mm-hmm. You need to exploit FPGA, GPUs, and the most powerful available CPUs at that time, because otherwise you will not able to do the physics and the high precision measurement that we are promising that we will do. And I think this holds also for Atlas CMS. The amount of data is going to increase so much that you need to reduce such amount of data as soon as possible in the trigger DAQ chain. Otherwise, the cost will explode. If you make some calculation with the current approach to the run 5, you immediately end up that the trigger DAQ system is going to cost much more the entire detector, much more the entire mm-hmm. detector. There is an interesting talk, one of our future grade workshop, maybe in Barcelona, in which a collaborator of mine tried to do this calculation in which there is some numbers there. It's very easy to understand that for every flavor physics, the cost explodes so much and you cannot afford such a reconstruction with the same approach that we are using now in the run 3.
Yes, they speak about heterogeneous systems and that's where we are going to move in the future. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I will leave you some time for lunch.
Okay. Thanks a lot. It has been very, very interesting and very useful. And I appreciated a lot this invitation. Thanks a lot. Okay.
Yes, I'm grateful as well on behalf of my colleagues as well. Thank you, Michael.
If there are questions, people can write me, they know where I am, and I'm very happy to interact with them if they want.
Yes, and hopefully we would have some in-person meetings in the future.
Yeah, sure, seminars. Sure, I hope so, because this situation is not so good, and it's not so nice, let's say, in this way. Okay, bye-bye, thanks a lot, have a nice day.
Okay, then goodbye.
Bye.